It's WrestlePod, the Troopany Show, with your host, James Troopany.
Hello, and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany, this is my show, and today I am joined by Miss Chelsea Spolin of ShouldersUp.net. How are you, Mom?
I'm doing okay. Having coffee, podcasting, it's a typical Sunday.
Yeah, pretty much the same for me, really. It's what we do with our Sundays now.
It is.
Won't be doing it next Sunday, but we've got plenty of stuff recorded for you to listen to. Don't worry, the Troopany Show never ends. We never take a holiday. I've actually posted Troopany shows from hotels before via Wi-Fi.
that's commitment, my friend.
That was New Year's Eve a couple of years ago. There was a Troopany Show back in the old WrestlePod days. I actually posted a podcast from a hotel room in Durham at 9 o'clock on New Year's Eve. That's how committed I am to the Troopany.
At 9 o'clock on New Year's Eve, so you still had time to party after that.
You would think so. We both went to bed and fell asleep. But there you go.
Aww.
And Durham on New Year's Day is nice, but nothing is open.
Oh, yeah. That's one of those downsides of living in a Christian country.
It is.
It?
We had to go to, yeah, especially in Durham, because the only thing in Durham is the Minster, and everything revolves around the Minster. It's the trade is the Minster. So the tourism trade is the Minster. We actually ended up going on a train to Newcastle to find something that was open.
Wow.
But there you go. Road stories. Road stories are cool. Anyway, but we're here not to talk about road stories. We're here to talk about pretty much two tours of New Japan Pro Wrestling that we thought we should talk to you about because they actually turn out to be quite interesting. Normally, with these two tours, not an awful lot happens, but actually it was very important, not only to New Japan Pro Wrestling, but also to Ring of Honor and to Rev Pro as well. So we thought we'd best mention them. Put something out there for you. So we're going to start with the February 26th show, which was Honor Rising from Currican Hall. In fact, three out of these four shows are going to be from Currican Hall. And that was the first of the Honor Rising shows. And it opened up with Dave Finlay, Juice Robinson and Kushida defeating Gedo, Jedo and the last real man, Silas Young, in a pretty good match of 10 minutes. It was all right. It was fun. Silas Young was the opening act for this tour and was pretty funny, to be honest, in his toxic masculinity way.
No surprise. It doesn't totally work for me. The guy's a thoroughly capable wrestler, but his gimmick, I'm like, oh, okay, and I roll my eyes.
I think he realizes he's being like the jerk that he is, but
I do think he knows. Yes. I just don't know if the audience always does.
No, I think that is actually something that Ring of Honor fans certain Ring of Honor fans have been commenting on the last 2 weeks as well. But anyway, Yeah, we'll probably brought up in a big way as Ring of Honor is kind of planning a big year. So the more it happens, the bigger they get. Maybe it'll go away. Maybe it'll become more of a problem. I'm sure we'll talk about it at the time. Then moving on to the second match, Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi, Evil, and Sonata defeated Delirious, Jushin Thunder Liger, and Tiger Mask in a match for the Never Openweight 6-Man Tag Team Championship. I'll be honest, didn't realize it was a title match.
Neither did I.
No. It was Delirious running around like a loon was quite funny. That was pretty hilarious. It was all right, I thought.
It was good. I think the crowd really loves Jushin Thunder Liger.
Oh, they love him.
No matter what he does. And they seemed confused by Delirious.
He's a confusing kind of cat, really. Yeah.
His gimmick feels very tokusatsu inspired, you know, like those Japanese the shows that have, it's not like the genre that Power Rangers is from. It's like the genre where they have all the monsters that fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
You know, so I was sort of thinking like maybe the Japanese audience will get it, but I'm not sure they totally did.
Yeah, and it's odd because like Delirious is like he's a Shikara product, isn't he? Really, you know, he spent an awful lot longer in Shikara than he has anywhere else. Obviously, he's the boss of Ring of Honor, and he books Ring of Honor. And I suppose you really couldn't find two more polar opposite products than Shikara and Ring of Honor. But he's got a real strong understanding of Japanese wrestling from that background. So yeah, they were confused. Yes. But it was cool, and it's cool to see Delirious in a ring, because I haven't seen him wrestle for a while, so it was nice. It was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we moved on to an eight-man match where Chaos, Hiroki Goto, Kazuchika Okada, Will Ospreay and Yoshihashi defeated Bullet Club, Bloodluck Fale, Tama Tonga, Tangaroa and Yojiro Takahashi, 11 minutes and 5 seconds, in the usual crisp eight-man style of these kind of matches. It was good. There's always heat between Bullet Club and Chaos, and this was a fun match on those grounds, I think.
Everybody got their big spots in. I care about Goto now, which, like, 2017 is wild. I can't believe that I care about that guy post Wrestle Kingdom, but I care about that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ospreay got all his usual craziness in, which was fun. Yeah, it was good. It wasn't intended to be, like, earth-shattering, but it was fun.
Yeah, it was good. Then moving on, because we've got a lot to fit in today, so I'm not trying to skim over stuff, but we're trying to concentrate on the championship matches and the main events, because they're the important stuff. In a really, really, really good match, War Machine and the Young Bucks went at it in 12 minutes and 5 seconds. Power versus speed, and power won out on this occasion. It was really cool. I enjoyed this match. I got a lot of time for Hanson and Rowe. I think they're a really cool team, and the Bucks are the Bucks. It was really, really good, and a loss doesn't do anything bad to the Bucks, because War Machine are like twice their size.
And, I mean, also, like, let's face it, they're the Young Bucks. Like, win or lose, they're the Young Bucks. Yeah. Like, they're established enough that the people that love them are still going to love them, even when they lose things.
Yeah, I think so. And then in a six-man match, which was just plain hilarious.
Oh my God.
And quite possibly the opposite of toxic masculinity.
The most important match of 2017. Taguchi and Tanahashi as Dalton Castle's entourage. Like, anyone who follows Shoulders Up on Twitter saw me literally screaming, like, Tanahashi, he wasn't just one of Dalton's boys. He helped, like, strip him the way that they do, and then was running around with the streamers in the ring. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm so happy they did that.
Unfortunately, they lost. To Hiromu Takahashi, Punisher Martinez, and Tetsuya Naito.
But they won in our hearts.
They did. Punisher Martinez clearly didn't like tagging with LIJ. I thought that was really, really cool. It's like, I'm going to have to tag with you to win this match. However, I'm not going to be your friend.
He's the only person who would ever be upset about tagging with LIJ. It's like, man, I have to hang out with the cool kids' lunch table. I'm so mad about it.
But it was an thoroughly entertaining match. Never has six great wrestlers had so much fun.
It did look like they were having fun.
Yes. Yeah. And then Jay Lethal and Katsuyori Shibata defeated Bullet Club, Cody and Hangman Page, in 14 minutes and 6 seconds. It was pretty good. Kind of got a precursor of the much-dreamed Katsuyori Shibata-Cody Rhodes matchup. Sorry, Cody M42 matchup. It was pretty good for what this was. Maybe could have been better, but then again, they didn't particularly want to take shine away from the main event, I think.
I think that's true, and also... I think one of the difficulties you have when you put Cody in a multi-man match is that Cody is less established in whatever his deal is going to be than those other guys, weirdly. You know what I mean? Like, we know what Jay Lethal is. We know what Shibata is. Hangman Page, maybe we know a little bit less, but we're also expecting a little bit less, I guess. Not in terms of the skill level. That's not what I mean. I'm not trying to, like, you know, say anything bad about him. But, like, we're not expecting him to be a guy who could potentially have a main event match on a New Japan Pro card anytime soon. Whereas Cody has all that star power, and he keeps getting booked in these, like, really prestigious positions, but he hasn't completely figured out his character yet.
Yeah. I think that's possibly something... You kind of saw it a little bit on TNA last week, where, you know, TNA in the UK for us last week, not the TNA that went out in the US, so, because we probably haven't seen that yet. And I don't watch TNA till Sunday night, because that's the night it's supposed to be watched, damn it. So like Cody Rhodes' character in his heel turn with Moose, it's kind of going to what the other Cody Rhodes characters are at the moment in Ring of Honor and in New Japan Pro Wrestling. So he's got to approach it differently. You know, the Cody you see in New Japan is not the same as the Cody you see as Ring of Honor, and is not the same as the Cody you see in TNA. It's got to be slightly staggered into different places. And this is the joy of watching someone trying to work in four different places at once, I have to say.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Cody and Ring of Honor, at least at the one show that I was at last week, felt very much to me like heel Cody in New Japan. The thing is that I think that he has the heel mannerisms down when he's not in the ring. Like, when he walks to the ring, he can do it like a heel. He can, you know, be too sweeting the other Bullet Club members and, like, living it up. But when he's in the ring, I'm like, well, you still wrestle like a good guy.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I think there's something Dynamite Kid said about Ted DiBiase, which kind of applies to Cody as well. Dynamite called Ted DiBiase a working heel because he didn't have it in him just to punch somebody in the mouth for no reason.
I could see that.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's a, Dynamite said a heel's got to be a heel. He has to cheat. He said, and he's got to be vicious. You know, there are heels that aren't vicious. He said, but to him, that's what a good heel was all being about, was being about going to the absolute extremes to get a win. And because DiBiase did do that, but he didn't do it in a vicious way, to him, he called him a working heel, a guy who worked heel style. And I think Cody, that kind of applies to Cody as well. You know, that's high praise as well. I mean, like Ted DiBiase, I'm trying to praise Cody, but he has similar problems to what Ted DiBiase has. You watch Ted DiBiase, doesn't look that much different as a heel as he does a face when he's working in the 80s. Anyway, Bullet Club then, in the main event, Adam Cole and Kenny Omega defeated the Briscoe Brothers in 22 minutes of a very, very good match. Briscoe's doing their thing as one of the best tag teams in the world, and Adam Cole and Kenny Omega having a bit of a fallout towards the end of the show, which was predicted by one Chelsea Spollen some months ago.
I called it. I mean, come on. Like, of course those guys are going to fight over who the Young Bucks love more. Like, I mean, that's not explicitly what they're fighting about, but that is what they're fighting about. And I don't know if anyone watches the, probably everyone who listens to this watches the Elite videos that they did where they solved their issues temporarily with karaoke. But did you watch that, James?
I did not watch that. No, I haven't had a chance.
Oh, it's hysterically funny. You have to.
I will go back and watch that.
It is great. I think really the best part of that is Adam Cole cutting this promo to interrupt Kenny, and Kenny's like, in English, these people are Japanese. They don't understand you. But yeah, it's going to be, you were saying you think that Adam Cole is going to leave the Bullet Club or that Kenny's going to leave the Bullet Club. What do we think is happening there?
I've got a feeling it's got to be one or the other. Well, the rumors are after this week is that Cole's gone from Ring of Honor anyway, and therefore that would end his New Japan deal. But obviously, whenever there's a title change, for those of you who don't know, Friday night at the 15th anniversary show, Christopher Daniels won the Ring of Honor World Championship for the very first time in 15 years of trying.
It took forever, man.
Yeah.
I can't believe they made him wait so long.
In a very, very emotional match, frees up Adam Cole to do other things should he be gone from the company, which no one's really quite sure on, but the rumor is he's bound for NXT. So I'm not really sure if you know, it would work out. We actually get Kenny versus Adam in the end.
On the one hand, it's a little disappointing because that would be cool and it would be fun and it would put the Young Bucks in a position that they're not normally in, where they have to choose sides. Like, normally the Young Bucks' allegiances are pretty clear. You know, we know exactly where they stand all the time. But on the other hand, Kenny and the Young Bucks not having to possibly break up as a trio may be good because it's so popular.
I think so. I think it'd be good for New Japan, certainly. It'd be better for New Japan than it would be for anybody else. Ring of Honor doesn't really matter so much. Kenny doesn't go and do every tour. So,
although they keep hinting at it.
Yeah, they do. You know, so it's a possibility. But I think Kenny likes keeping himself fresh. You know,
yes.
It's one of those things as well. You know, it was like, I remember when listening to an interview with Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows, and they were saying, like, back in the New Japan days, and they were like, well, how come Machine Gun never does any indie shows in North America? And Doc says, because he's lazy and because he wants to rest, because he earns enough money and he doesn't have to. But I go make him so we can sell some t-shirts. Come on, I got to get the kids through college. We can sell these t-shirts. So, so that some of those guys, not really being lazy, that's not really fair, because these shows are hard work. And obviously, if you saw that match at Wrestle Kingdom, you'll understand why Kenny took a month off to try and recover. So,
absolutely, and well deserved.
And with Suzuki going back, it doesn't leave a big hole in the schedule. you can swap people in and out. It makes life a little bit easier in the office now they've got a deeper roster than they had before. It was good to clear them out for a couple of years because it gave other people chances to shine, but it's nice to have them back so you've got more toys to play with, I think.
That's true.
Okay, moving on to February the 27th show. Jado, I believe it was the eighth last real man was Jado, and Gedo was the second last real man. And Kevin Kelly was somewhere around about, I think, 900. And Rocky Romero was somewhere in the top 20, I think. They got it. They had it on a sliding scale.
I see.
Yeah. which tells you how far, like, Kelly and Rocky Romero were doing as a commentary team. They were really funny. I really liked it. It was entertaining. It was pretty cool.
Rocky is such a gift to them, like, because he's such a great wrestler. He gets such a reaction. The ladies scream very loudly whenever he comes out, but he can also sit down and do commentary and be really, really funny and charismatic.
Yeah, and work for you in the dojo, training people, and do music production for you as well, and understands how promotion works too.
What would they do without him?
I think there's one guy like that in every promotion. It's like Jeremy Borash in TNA. Without Borash, TNA falls apart. Like it very quickly. So yeah, you've got to have those guys. You've got to have a couple of those guys around just to be able to do things for you. You know, I kind of see Rocky as kind of their Borash, a guy who can just do, you just plug him in and he will go do stuff for you, and he can cover most of the bases that you need. Very, very useful guy. So yeah. Moving back to the match, Jado and Silas Young defeated Dave Finley and Kushida in a pretty fun and entertaining match. 8 minutes and 16 seconds there. Anything you want to say about that one, or is it just good?
Mostly that I like Kushida a lot, and I wish that some of his matches were more prestigious instead of just being in, like, the opening match of something, you know? Like, I want that guy to have bigger matches and more cool, heavy, you know, emotionally heavy, like, championship matches.
Yeah.
Because I think he deserves it. Because I think for a long time he was basically just, like, carrying the division on his back without really getting the prestige for it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I
think he's
one of a good match, but I think they can do better with Kushida.
Workhorse kind of guy, and sometimes those guys kind of, you just expect it of them. Of course it's going to be good because it's him.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's true.
And yeah, Dave Finley breaking out there. Now he's out of the dojo and truly a main roster guy. He's doing a lot of interviews and getting his name out there. He was talking this week on an interview I saw about his father's legacy in New Japan and his father's legacy in wrestling in general, which I thought was really cool. Anyway, moving on. Los Ignorables de Japón, the full crew of Bushi, Evil, Tanaka, Hashi, Sanada, and Naito, defeated Dalton Castle, Delirious, Jushin Thunder Liger, Reisuki Taguchi, and Tiger Mask. And the boys for the evening were Katsuki Kitamura and Temiyuki Oka, which was pretty funny. It Delirious and Naito were just like, what do we do with this? And
Naito's like deadpan expression of, this is actually happening. Okay. I could just watch, like, instead of watching a match sometimes, if it's a tag match and Naito's not, like, in the ring all the time, I just watch Naito reacting to things. It's just magical. It's just great.
I mustn't forget Reisuki Taguchi as Dalton Castle.
That was so funny.
Yeah, yeah. Ryan Royd said on Twitter last night that Reisuki Taguchi is your drunk uncle. And I pointed out that I made that joke last year, but it's still funny.
True. This is my issue with Taguchi, right? Like, he's basically, I said this on Twitter and a couple of people got mad at me for it. He's kind of the James Ellsworth of New Japan Pro. And granted, he's like 50 times the wrestler that guy is.
Yeah, yeah.
But his job is to be awkward so that other people look cool.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's hard for me to watch.
It is, yeah, it is like that. If you don't like awkward humor, I'm not a big fan of awkward humor myself. Taguchi, I don't mind, though, because he's fun enough with it. He's not doing, you can tell he's not doing it seriously, and there's enough pantomime to make it cool. But yeah, I can see where you're coming from with that, definitely.
It's just sometimes I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know.
All right, we'll move on to the next match, which was War Machine, Hanson and Rowe defeating Guerrillas of Destiny. Another match showing how far Guerrillas of Destiny have come in the last 12 months. They looked really, really good. In fact, they looked better than War Machine in spots in this match. I really enjoyed it. Looking forward to seeing what Guerrillas of Destiny come up with in the next couple of months, really.
They used to bore me so much. Like, you remember, like, every Guerrillas of Destiny match we were talking about for a couple of months there, I was just like, eh, whatever, I don't care. And they were really good in this match.
Yeah, it's hanging out. If you want to get good, hang out with cool tag teams. If you want to be a good tag team, you look at, if you go back to the great tag team divisions of the 80s, of the WWF in the, like, mid-1980s, and there was not any tag teams that were taking any up, like, there was no one who was just taking up space. They were all really, really good, and the reason why they were all really, really good was because you had the Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation, and everybody was trying to catch up.
Yeah,
you know, guys like the Killer Bees, who are like one of the best tag teams ever, were only third or fourth down the pecking order in that particular tag division. And the same thing happened in WCW in the early 90s. You had the Steiners, the Freebirds, Doom, Skyscrapers. All these, well, the Skyscrapers weren't a great tag team, but they were a great spectacle. And, you know, people could work with them. They could do things because they were quite willing to be told what to do. And you basically had Dan Spivey clipping Sid Vicious around the air to get him to do things right. So, yeah, you know, there was ways and means. If you have a culture of greatness, then greatness will happen. And that's what you need. And that's what's happening in New Japan Tag Wrestling at the minute, either in the juniors tag division or in the heavyweight tag division. So, the right place to be if you want to learn to be good quick. So, yeah. Moving on then. Six-man tag match. Bullet Club, Bad Luck Fale, Hangman Page, and Yujiro Takahashi. Distinct lack of ladies of the evening for Takahashi on this tour. Maybe they couldn't pop for the model rental. I'm not sure what's happening there, but it doesn't have the same...
He's pretty bland without it.
I was going to say, he does not have the same swagger, does he?
No. I mean, I've said this before, like, he's a perfectly serviceable, good wrestler. His gimmick doesn't do anything for me at all.
No.
Like, the ladies that come out before him or with him are always more interesting than he is.
Yeah, I mean, it is just like, maybe it's time to change things up for Takahashi. I don't know how you change things up for Takahashi. I don't know where he does, but yeah, you're right. It's interesting. I think also, that this is going to sound a bit daft, but wearing black all the time doesn't, like, enlighten yourself to being outwardly thinking, does it? Could be oppressive.
I mean, if you're Bullet Club, like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah,
you're supposed to.
Well, the Bucks and Kenny, they managed to swap things around, I guess. But yeah,
that's true. I guess, but I mean, like, maybe part of that is that we expect everything the Bucks do at this point to be like colorful and crazy. I don't know. But you're right. I mean, I guess technically speaking, if the Bucks can change up their aesthetic, then why can't that guy?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just seemed like back when he was in Chaos and he used to use, like, where he was more of a porn star than a pimp.
Yep.
So it was more colorful outfits, and, like, they were basically trying to portray a different porn movie with every show he did. So his presentation was way different.
But, which is weird to me, but I...
Oh yeah, I'm not saying it was
room
nice.
For, like, one of those gimmicks in wrestling, like, Joey Ryan does that so well that I don't need anybody else to.
Fair enough. They defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi, Jay Lethal, and Juice Robinson 9 minutes and 10 seconds, a perfectly serviceable match. Then we went on to the NEVER Openweight Championship. Hiroki Goto punishing Martinez. Must admit, this is the first tour that I'd seen Martinez. Pretty impressed with the young man. I thought it was really, really good. I thought the match was okay. Wasn't as good as anything else we've seen in the last 12 months from the NEVER Openweight Championship, but I didn't expect it with two guys who had not wrestled each other before.
And, like, I think it accomplished what it needed to. Like, both of those guys came out of it looking good. They had a strong showing. And Goto is really over right now, which is still kind of a pleasant surprise. I don't know, because you know what I mean? Like, he was always good, but I feel like this time last year, people didn't care.
Yeah. No, they were into they liked him, but they didn't love him.
Right.
There was, because he was still in that lovable loser character, never quite going to get the big one, that's what was holding him back. And now he's buried those demons. I think he's, you know, in the storyline, it's made him much more likable.
Yeah.
And he's still kind of like, his core element is the fact that he's a face. And whereas the other guys in Chaos's core element was that they were heels who have turned face, whereas he's a face who has kind of turned heel to be part of Chaos, because Chaos is still the tweener group. It depends on who they're wrestling at the time. So it's interesting, certainly. And then it was the main, well, kind of the semi-main event, which is Adam Cole defending the Ring of Honor World Championship against Yoshihashi. Speaking of over, Yoshihashi was seriously over in this match. And this was really, really good. Yoshihashi has so developed. We keep saying this, and we've been saying this for a couple of years. Is this going to be Yoshihashi's year? Well, he's having cracking matches, and he's going up the card again. I can't see it not being his year this year. If he wins anything, I don't know. But certainly, for a guy, he's kind of getting up to that Ishii position of everything he does is crisp, is really, really good. He's just maybe not getting the support for it that he deserves.
I think the crowd definitely is behind him. I don't know if the booking is 100% reflecting where he is in terms of like how the fans feel about him. But this was a really good match, and it wasn't like those guys were half-assing it. I mean, you know, they treated it like a main event.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, definitely. And Adam Cole looking like a world champion again.
Yep.
Yeah, carries himself exceptionally well. Right then, the main event for that particular night, though, was an eight-man tag match where Bullet Club, Cody, Kenny Omega, Matt and Nick Jackson defeated Chaos, Jay Briscoe, Kazuchika Okada, Mark Briscoe, and Will Ospreay. This was really, really good. Ospreay and Omega was something I kind of now want to see. We got swerved out of the first showdown between Omega and Okada, but we did see it in this match. There was some cool stuff. I did love the opening where Kenny gets in to face Okada. And Okada goes, nah, get Cody in here. You've had your chance. That was so cool.
Oh, it was. Yeah. I love that how well they've done at establishing relationships between Okada and a bunch of the other top guys.
Yeah.
Like, he has established dynamics with all the other guys who are top stars. And I feel like that's so great because the payoff of that is that you can put him and Kenny in a ring for 30 seconds and the crowd has a big emotional reaction to it, even if they don't get to wrestle, where Okada's like, ah, peace out, Kenny. You know, like it's really, it makes me wish that more promotions were capable of doing things like that. And it makes me wish that WWE, who is absolutely capable, would do things like that, where characters were allowed to have more than one relationship that mattered to the storyline at a time.
Yeah. And that also wasn't forgotten 3 minutes after the match ends.
Oh, you know, like there's no excuse for such one dimensional booking, especially in the reality era where everybody has the internet and they can go back and watch whatever they want on YouTube or the network or whatever. Like it's so helpful to, it's so helpful to the product as a whole if all the characters have multiple things about them that matter that you have to focus on.
Yeah, completely agreed. Definitely. Right then, moving on to the 45th anniversary shows, which happened last week. This was on the 6th of March. We had the 45th anniversary show proper, which was opened by Manabe Nakanishi and Tomoyuki Oka in a bit of a hard hitters match. This Nakanishi has taken a shine to young Oka and is wrestling him as well as mentoring him and tagging with him as well. So this was a nice piece of work, and obviously the limited moveset that Oka has as a young boy, it was pretty cool. I like this a lot. I thought it was very, very cool. You know, I'm not a big fan of Nakanishi, as you know, anyone who's listened to this show. He is a bit lumpy, but it's nice to see him putting some time into a youngster. And he seems to have kind of like loosened up to try and catch up with the youngster because he has some speed on him. And to try and keep up and put a good show on for him, he's doing all the right things, I think.
My tweet about this was bare chests, black trunks, chops, and headbutts. Like, it wasn't bad, but it's not a genre of wrestling that I get really emotionally invested in.
No.
I think both of those guys were good. It's not my deal.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. You know, it's a very old school kind of way of looking at it. It's strong style at its most basic, I think. And
yep.
Yeah, it was all right. That was followed by something that was really cool, which was Chaos, Gato, Hiroki Goto, Jado, and Yoshihashi, who defeated Suzuki Gun, David Boy Smith Jr., El Desperado, Minoru Suzuki, and Taka Michinoku. Because anytime you've got Minoru Suzuki in a ring, it's going to be cool. And it was a payback match from New Year's Dash, where Chaos really were after Suzuki Gun and after Revenge. It was a really good piece of work. Chaos wins that match in 8 minutes and 47 seconds. Really enjoyed this. It's really good. What do you think, Chelsea?
It was fun. I think the only part of Suzuki Gun that I'm really emotionally invested in is Minoru Suzuki. And yeah, that could be that I'm relatively new to New Japan Pro as a product. So I don't like... There's stuff that I know that long-term watchers are bringing to their experience of this, like prior knowledge that is enhancing it for them that I don't have. But I think that needs to change a little bit. Like, I think they need to do more of explaining, like, I mean, I know what Suzuki Gun are about. Like, they're going to screw everything up and Minoru Suzuki is the greatest, right? And they want glory for themselves and they'll interrupt your match and determine the outcome by doing so. But at the same time, I'm also kind of like, well, I need to care about all those other guys.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
And
Sorry,
I was going to say, like, you can't do that in every single match. And Minoru Suzuki is, like, such a lightning rod that he's got so much voltage in one place that it's kind of hard for it to be spread around, I think.
Yeah, I think... As well, you've got a lot of older guys in there as well. Taka Michinoku, obviously, you know, 25-year pro. He comes with baggage, and it's cool baggage, but if people don't understand that baggage, he's not going to get over, is he?
I mean, he's not going to like fall down the card or anything, but yeah, he's not going to get over. He's not going to be the guy that gets huge pops whenever he comes out.
Yeah. I mean, David Boy Smith Jr. has shown great improvement since he came back as well. I think that's a really important thing. And I could see David Boy Smith having some singles runs, but it was, you know, I was thinking back to 2012 where Lance Hoyt was challenging for the Intercontinental Championship against Shinsuke Nakamura, and Nakamura and Ishii were challenging back to the Tag Team Championships with Davey Boy and Lance Hoyt. And it's hard to see that kind of interaction at the moment. All right, they've only been back a month. They've got to have time. But you're right in that sense. They need to get that done quickly. I think they made good steps on this tour, but you need more. Especially now you've got the downside of that bigger roster we were talking about earlier is now you've got a bunch of guys you've got to get over in a certain way. So that's something they need to tinker with very quickly. But yes. So the next match after that was the 10-man tag match, which was Bullet Club versus the Regular Army. We had Bad Luck Fale, Kenny Omega, Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, and Yujiro Takahashi. And they defeated David Finlay, Jushin Thunder Liger, Tiger Mask, Togi Makabe, and Yuji Takata in 11 minutes 16. This is the usual nuts and bolts, fantastic mixed multi-man match. Not really anything that stood out for me in this one. What about you?
It wasn't like super exceptional compared to a lot of the cool stuff on the rest of the card, but it was fun.
Yeah, that sums it up really. Then we start getting to the meat and potatoes of this particular card. The IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Title match. Suzuki-kun defeated Rapingi Vice, Taichi and Yoshinobu Kanemura in a pretty emotional match. As Kevin Kelly said, a cast of thousands helped Suzuki Gun win the championship with Desperado running interference on the outside. Kanemura jumped Rapingi Vice before the bell because he hid behind them as they went down the aisle and attacked them from behind. It was a very emotional match. It was not a wrestling classic by any stretch of the imagination, but it told the right story at the right time with the right guys, I think.
I think so, and I think that when Rapingi Vice eventually has their comeback, it's going to have a big payoff.
Yes, certainly, and it keeps the books away from the championship for a while, which you know the books have been carrying the division for a long time. It's nice to give somebody else the ace status for a bit and refreshes the books.
I think they actually said in their the Elite video that they just did last week that they're not coming back to Japan for a while after the stuff that they've just filmed. I think they're like, we don't know when we're coming back.
That's
they didn't say like, we're not ever coming back, but they said, we don't know when. So I think New Japan Pro got the message that they needed to cool it a little bit on the Bucks so that the Bucks weren't the epicenter of everything.
Yeah, and they won't be back for Best of Super Juniors because, as the Bucks said, we suck at being singles wrestlers and we hate it. So, yeah, it was very emotional. It was sad to see Rocky lose his 7th championship. I was sad for him. And Beretta as well. You know, but Rocky I care more about. No offense, Trent. Anyway, the Rev Pro British Championship match next. Zack Sabre Jr. versus Katsuyori Shibata in an emotional roller coaster ride. And Zack Sabre Jr. defeats Shibata in 12 minutes and 36 seconds. A very, very, very good wrestling match with lots of interference and a twist at the end. What did you think, Chelsea?
This was my favorite thing on this card. I always like Zack Sabre Jr., but I don't usually get this emotionally invested in his matches. And it's not a knock on him. Like, he's not a wrestler who draws you in with the emotions that his character is feeling, right? Like, he's all about the technical wrestling and he's very, very cool and calm in very tense situations. But I think one of the things that Shibata does really well as a wrestler, you know, everybody talks about like how hard he hits, but it's like, it doesn't matter that he hits hard if he's not drawing emotion out of you and out of his opponents. Mm-hmm. And this was like the interplay between the two of them was so smart. Like, they used the wrestling to tell the story of the dynamic between their characters without doing it with like facial expressions and promos and corny acting. And they're both so good that they can do that. Like, when Shibata was teasing at doing like an octopus hold, I was like, oh my God, you're doing, you know, his greatest hits. And then I felt the same when Zack Sabre Jr. was kicking Shibata when Shibata was on the ground. I was like, oh, you're hitting him with the stuff that he does really well. I really love this match. I'm sorry. I'm just like babbling about it because it was... It was so great that I watched it like two or three times this week.
Did you see the Rev Pro match where Shibata won the championship?
No, I didn't. And everybody keeps telling me that I need to.
Yeah.
Was it better than this?
It was longer because it was a main event. And I think that maybe gave it legs. I think if this was a main event, I think when they get back to the York Hall, they're going to blow the roof off the place. Yeah. I think it's going to be something well worth seeing. And I think all eyes will be on Bethnal Green. So, yeah, I think it could be epic. And I think this sets it up nicely. For those of you who don't know what the finish was, Zack Sabre Jr. Was on the defensive. It had been pretty much 50-50 through the whole match. And Minoru Suzuki comes down to ringside to distract Shibata. And Shibata gets caught for the pin. And Suzuki then offers the hand of friendship to Zack Sabre Jr., who becomes the latest member of Suzuki Gun. So, yeah, that was really,
which means
really
he doesn't have to wrestle Tai Chi.
Well, yeah, I mean, does anyone want to wrestle Tai Chi? I mean, he's kind of greasy.
Well, Zack Sabre Jr. joked about it on Twitter a couple times last year or the year before, where he was like, oh, I have to wrestle Tai Chi. And then right after he joined Suzuki Gun, a bunch of people were like, so he's not going to have to wrestle Tai Chi. And then he tweeted about it himself and was like, so that's why I'm not going to have to wrestle Tai Chi. It's like, good job, Zach.
Yeah. That's pretty hilarious. And yeah, but it kind of like, there's intrigue for me now, because like my dream match of the last few years has been like Marty Scurll versus Minoru Suzuki. And I pointed out that's actually possible. Now, but is it now possible?
Yes,
because Zack Sabre Jr. and Marty Scurll are running buddies in Rev Pro and in Ring of Honor. Well, we don't know in Ring of Honor, they've not been together in Ring of Honor, but it is the storyline, because the storylines are so complicated now. Because in Rev Pro, they're kind of running buddies, but they're not anymore. So it's like, maybe it's a possibility that we could see Suzuki. But if there's a title, if there's the Ring of Honor TV title in the lie, then Suzuki could wrestle Marty Scurll. It's all very cool. I like that idea.
Where would you put Scurll if you were going to put him in a New Japan Pro faction? Would you put him against Zack Sabre Jr. or on the same side?
Interesting. See, because Skull's character kind of like points to being a loner. You can't really be a loner and a heel in New Japan. It doesn't work like that. So I kind of see him, he's got enough swagger about him to be in Chaos, but I think he'd get outshone in Suzuki Gun. So I'd stick him in Chaos and tag him up with Osprey. for the
Super
Junior.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Him and Ospreay, that's fire right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would work. I could see that.
Yeah, but you'd maybe have to soften the villain character a little bit to get to shoehorn him into chaos.
Either that or when he's there, everybody else has to step up their heel game.
Yeah, yeah, and just run him against regular army.
Yep.
Yeah, associate membership. Anywho, moving on. The IWGP Tag Team title match was also very emotional as well, and we had new champions too, Tenkoji. Arguably the greatest tag team in Japanese wrestling history, defeated Tomohiro Ishii and Toru Yano in a title change of 12 minutes and 28 seconds. Really fun, really entertaining. Ishii was clobbering people left, right, and center. Yano was Yanoing his way through the evening as best as he possibly could and trying to keep up with these guys. Tenzan and Kojima were on it. This is the best match they've had in, well, about 3 years. A lot of the spirit of Mr. Honma, who was sadly injured on the road to 45th anniversary show. He took a bad DDT, took a stinger, and was paralyzed temporarily, though we are getting news that he's okay now and will recover. Should be back in about 6 months' time. But Kojima laid in a Kakeshi just for him. So it was really, really cool match. I really enjoyed this. Sad to see Ishii and Yano lose the titles, but I think it's the right decision for one of the greatest tag teams that ever lived to take the championships back at this particular moment in time, considering who is across the water in Ring of Honor as tag team champions at the minute, with possibilities of things happening there. So,
ooh.
Yeah, Tenkoji and the Hardys, there you go.
That's a money match right there.
Yeah, that could be something very special for Ring of Honor if that's an opportunity for them. What did you think of this?
So I thought this was really fun. And obviously I'm not quite as invested in Tenzan and Kojima as you are, just because I haven't seen quite as much of their massive body of work. But you could feel that the audience understood that this was very important.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of why I enjoyed it, was because I could tell. I was like, okay, the story is well told, and when the well-established like pieces are moved into play in such a way that you don't necessarily need to know what the story is beforehand, you can still enjoy it. And Yano was very funny, as he always is. So that was, but he wasn't just funny either. Like he helped with the emotion of the match.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Right, then, moving on. The 8-man tag team match, Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi, Evil, Sonata, and Naito defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi, Juice Robinson, Kushida, and Michael Elgin. Bit of rough and tumble. There was, as usual, LIJ jumped before the bell. It was pretty good. I enjoyed this. I like the speed. I like the viciousness in Kushida as well. And in Tanahashi, there was a new level of upping the game, I think, there. That was really important. And good, well-rounded match. What did you think, Chelsea?
I get very excited anytime Naito and Tanahashi are in the same place, because part of Naito's character is that he really wants to be in that like top guy spot that Okada is in. And one of the ways that he tries to prove himself is by messing with Tanahashi. So I was like really, really excited for that. And then they didn't get a lot of interaction, but the little tiny bits that they did get, I was like, okay, this is good. They're still telling that story. I like Kushida. I want more for him than what he gets. Juice Robinson is really impressive. He's been really good since he came back. Since Wrestle Kingdom, he's been really good. He's been like impressing me in every match that he has. He's making a name for himself, which is cool.
And Overlord Rover as well.
Yeah. He's getting big reactions, which is I'm very happy for him, because his job in NXT for such a long time was just to make everybody else look good, and he did it well. But it's time for that guy to get established and get his own thing going, and he's doing it really well. He's clearly learning from all the stuff that he is doing now and getting better and better, because he looks better in every match I see him in.
Definitely. Okay, then, moving on to the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title match. Champion Hiromi Takahashi of LIJ defeated Raisuke Kikuchi in 17 minutes and 42 seconds in a match that was a much better told story in a lot of senses than the Dragon Lee match at New Beginnings, and definitely was safer, as our good friend Dan Reed would probably be very happy about. This was very, very good. Not as jaw-dropping, but certainly emotional. This was an evening where, like, emotional storytelling took over. It wasn't all about like athletic endeavor. It was about getting that story across, and a lot of the older guys stepped up their game and really showed the youngsters how it's done.
Yeah. I was really surprised by how much I enjoyed this, because Hiromu is someone I've warmed up to. Like, I didn't totally get him for a long time. For a long time, I was just like, oh, that he's there. You know, I recognize him. He's a good wrestler, but I don't really care that much. And now I actually care when I see him. And Taguchi really impressed me, which is not what I was expecting, because, like, as we said before in this podcast, he makes me a little uncomfortable sometimes. But he's supposed to. Like, he is at peace with his own awkwardness. I am not at peace with it yet, and I need to get there, clearly, because when he has these not just opportunities, but like where he has a situation where he is required to deliver on a very high level, clearly he can do it, because he was excellent in this match.
Yeah, I think this was just really good. This is what wrestling should be about, isn't it? It's telling a good story. Everyone went home safe. That was the key thing. And you know, they're not going to need a month off to recover either. So very good. Yeah. And then in the main event, in a non-championship match, IWGP Heavyweight Champion Kazuchika Okada defeated Tiger Mask W in 27 minutes and 3 seconds. This was just exceptionally good. And Tiger Mask W, who, you know, may well be on a plane back from Colchester this afternoon, was exceptional. Fantastic match. I really, really enjoyed it. You know, he's like, well, yeah, let's not kayfabe it. Kota Ibushi, we know, is Tiger Mask W. What week he's had. Like, you know, he's wrestling the 45th anniversary show against the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. Then he hops on a plane and goes to Colchester to wrestle for some of our friends. XWA UK.
Right?
Yeah, it was XWA UK. Has 2 matches over the weekend, flies back to Japan, and will probably be wrestling for DDT next week. He has chosen a very different path to his wrestling career, and I'm very happy he has, because he's doing things that follow his heart, and he's doing the things he wants to do, and he's producing some incredible stuff. And the Tiger Mask W character is really, really getting over with the New Japan fans. They get it. It's really impressive. And of course, Kazuchika Okada is the Rainmaker, and he was as good as it could possibly be.
I wrote one of my tweets that I wrote at the end of this when I was watching it, is that all roads lead to Okada, you know, like it is the East and Okada is the sun. Like, there's a reason that guy is the guy, and he's so good most of the time that you don't, or he's so good all the time that you don't really have to dig in and pay attention to why he is the guy. But this match is just one more example of, like, why he's in that position. Because, I mean, watching it, if anything, I was watching it thinking, I was like, man, you know, Kota could have been an ace in somebody's gigantic promotion, you know, getting paid tons and tons of money to be in the Okada-like position of being the guy who is in that top star position. And he chose to be a weird artist instead. And, you know, then there's Okada, who's like, you know, always delivers, and you know exactly what the level of prestige is just because he's there. And they have this beautiful match where they're so evenly matched, and the level of competition was really, really intense. And but not too intense. Like, it was intense, but it wasn't so intense that you stopped, like, having fun while you were watching it, if that makes sense.
No.
Like, they did such a great job of picking and choosing what cool things each guy got to do, you know? Like, where Okada nearly tombstoned Kota off the buckle, and then there was a super tiger bomb, and, like, I couldn't tell who was going to win at first. I was like, oh my God, what are they going to do? Are they going to put over Tiger Mask W because of the cartoon being a thing and they want to push that? Or are they going to put over Okada? And then when Okada pulled it off, I was like, okay, obviously. Yeah. Obviously. Like, it has to be Okada. Okada is...
You can't lose to a cartoon character, can you, really?
No.
But...
It was cool because Kota is at that level where he could conceivably defeat Okada, and it would have made sense in that sense, like just like skill level if he had. But the storytelling is that Okada has to win.
Yeah. I was kind of like looking back at a couple of years ago, the Rainmaker Balor feud, some 2013, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And I was looking back at Rainmaker then, and he had all the attributes then, but it was an empty jacket, if you see what I mean. He was there, and everything was looking like there, and he just followed on that same path, and that jacket is now filled out. He is everything he says he is and more. You know, that path is really interesting to me. It's like, and it's all that little meta information, that feud with Tanahashi that lasted for years and years, the match with Kenny, the matches with Marufuji last year, the matches with Bad Luck Fale at New Japan where he lost, New Japan Cup 2 years ago where he lost and then gets the win back in the feud afterwards. It's all those little stories of these little things. He's wrestled different guys at different times, and it's all built up this character that we see and all that meta information that makes him the Rainmaker, you know, and it's so cool to see her, to see him developed and how he's pieced this thing together. Because to me, he's our Ric Flair, he's our generation's Flair, and I never got to see. I only got to see Flair in his heyday or at the end of his career. I never got to see that story of how he got there. I did in retrospect, but it's a different thing when you're watching it every 2 weeks. You're watching a show and you see this guy click that one step closer to supremacy, you know, that's really important to me as far as storytelling in New Japan's concerned.
Yeah, he's kind of the Japanese Randy Orton in the sense that he's so good that he can sleepwalk through stuff that other people have to work really hard to do, but he cares a lot more than Randy Orton ever has.
yeah, I mean, I just have no interest in Randy Orton whatsoever. No, I know he's good.
Very boring most of the time.
Yeah, I know he's good. I know he can wrestle. I know he can put interesting matches together, but just take one look at him and it's like, yeah, well,
he's not interested.
Can't care
That's
about
the
you.
Problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Okada cares. Like Okada was totally stone-faced in that match with Kota until Kota was like on the ground in front of him, and then he slapped him and started yelling at him, and like I didn't even understand most of what he was saying, but I didn't have to either. Like that little moment of like, I'm so mad at you that I have to just smack you. You know, I was like, okay, I needed that. I needed that. Whereas like if, you know, Randy Orton doesn't do things like that, he's just like by the numbers. He has, you know, I guess the phrase he uses for himself is I like to bat 1,000. And so he doesn't deviate from the thing that he does. And it's very rare for him to have a situation where he's working with somebody where he gets excited about it. Whereas Okada, whether or not he is personally excited about it, I oftentimes, like, I feel like he's still doing his best anyway because he cares so much about the future of the company and about his position there.
Definitely. Right then, we moved on to 45th anniversary at Currican Hall, which was on the 7th of, I believe, 7th March. Hot fans at K-Hole, they loved this show, and there wasn't even a championship match on it. There wasn't even a singles match on it. That's how much they loved this show. It was just a bunch of stuff for the sake of having a bunch of stuff, because we're going to have a big party at K-Hole, and that's what we're going to do.
It was the cool down.
Yeah, and that's what they did. Everyone had a blast. And it opened with David Finlay, Hiroki Kawato, Manobu Nakanishi, and Ryosuke Taguchi wrestling Tenkoji, Rushin Thunder Liger, and Tomoyuki Oka. Just props to Kawato, who got his stuff in as quickly as he possibly could, and then got the shit kicked out of him.
Yep.
Well done for trying, son. Probably not the best maneuver, but he did it. It was a thing. Piece of haymakering fun, this.
Yeah. Kawato was a blank canvas before this.
Yeah.
You know? He had two or three moments in his debut match that really impressed me. And then I was like, okay, that guy is clearly, he has the toolkit to be a really good wrestler. What are they going to do with him? And they pick the thing, you know? And they may not keep at it with that particular thing, but the thing they picked for him seems to work really well because I believed it.
Yeah, it just reminded me of a Peter Kay heckle put down that was on an old show of his. Guy shouts out from the audience and Peter Kay says, "You can peak too early, son. Like your dad." Anyway, moving on. Six-man tag match. Juice Robinson, Michael Elgin, and Yuji Nagata defeated Bullet Club, Bad Luck Fale, Tangaloa, and Yugihiro Takahashi. It was really weird watching Tangaloa without Tama Tonga.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, for me, it's just like, where's his other arm gone?
He's clearly not totally used to that. Like, no. You can tell.
Yeah.
There's a difference there. Like, his... I don't... It wasn't better and it wasn't worse. It was just different.
Yeah, it's just like this wasn't clicking the way I wanted it to. But yeah, it was pretty good. Elgin throwing people around. The Elgin Bad Luck Farley showdown was pretty cool. I like that. And Yuji Nagata getting the win, I believe, over Tangelo, wasn't it? It was just a straight Saito suplex, wasn't it? When's the last time anyone in New Japan won with a backdrop driver?
Backdrops are kind of out of fashion. Like, they're coming back, but yeah, they were kind of gone for a while.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess because, you know, people wanted their necks to rest for a while, but there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, and you botch one, and, like, that's game over for the rest of your match. You're kind of screwed.
Yeah, as Steve Williams did one to Tayu when he won the Triple Crown, and Finn Martin, our co-host, was interviewing Steve Williams for Powerslam, and he said, yeah, I think I kind of shortened him by about 3/4 of an inch on that one.
Ouch.
Anyway, 8-man tag match was the next match after that. Suzuki Gun, Desperado, Taichi, Yoshinobu Kanemura, and Zack Sabre Jr. defeated Chaos, Beretta, Gedo, Hirooki Goto, and Jado. Again, a bit weird seeing Beretta not wrestling with Rocky Romero. It was quite fun, this, and Zack Sabre Jr. gets the best of Goto in 9 minutes and 39 seconds. Looking for another championship is the argument to add to his collection of 3 belts already.
He's more belt than man at this point.
Made of leather and gold is Zack Sabre Jr. 3 belts at the moment because he's got the Evolve, the PWG, and the Rev Pro British Heavyweight Championship. It was also, to be honest with you, I didn't think they'd let the Evolve belt be on New Japan television because Evolve is mainly associated with WWE. They have a working agreement there, don't they? So
I don't know that New Japan Pro has anything to lose by letting the Evolve belt be on their, you know, be on TV. Certainly not when it's like hanging around Zach with the other belts that he has, and at the end of the match he makes the Young Lion carry them out for him because he's like, I'm tired, you hold it. Which is actually what he said. He's like, I'm tired, you take it. And I was like, come on, Zach, really? It was a good heel move though.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they have anything to lose by it. I'm surprised that WWE didn't have a problem with it, but maybe this is one of those things where, like, nobody cleared it with them first, and maybe that was, you know, easier to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think Gabe would be that bothered either way, to be honest with you.
Why would he care? If anything, yeah, he's going to be like, hey, look, my belt was on New Japan Pro. Cool.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way he's looking at it. I also like the bit after, to mention this earlier, but Zack Sabre Jr. after, it may have been after this match where he went straight to the press. Just a brilliant, brilliant move for anyone who wrestles in Japan. Just go stand in front of the photographers because you want your face on Daily Baseball. You want your face in front of Tokyo Sports. That's where you need to be. And just started talking to the reporters, and he was saying, like, I'm already the king of the Indies, and next I'm going to be king of Japan. Short sound bites. Very, very smart. Very smart. Yeah.
He has really good instincts.
Yeah.
And also, I'm just going to say, before we're done talking about this match, that Zack Sabre Jr. bridging on his head is still, like, my favorite thing. And every time I see it, I kind of go, oh, my God, because it doesn't look like you should be able to do that. He does it, and he does it, like, all the time, and I still don't get tired of watching it.
Awful lot of bridges. You should watch more amateur wrestling. You'd see that all the time.
It's like, how much time do I have to watch wrestling?
I think this is it. And this is the tough thing. Like, how many of us pro fans actually sit and watch an amateur tournament? How much time could we actually give to sit and watch an amateur tournament and go, there's no promos?
I mean, there's like this very nice dude who follows Shoulders Up on Twitter now who runs a small promotion that I'm not going to say the name of, and he interacts with me regularly, and I want to find time to watch the stuff from his promotion because a lot of it's on YouTube, and I don't have time.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Because we got lots to watch, you know, between, for those of you who, you know, listen to the show all the time, we're always watching new stuff. If there isn't a card on from New Japan or a big card internationally that we think we should have a look at, we're looking at history stuff for the beginning of Japan series. I think last week I figured out I've watched somewhere like 11 hours of wrestling. And I have to go to work and eat.
Yep. I had to skip SmackDown and most of Raw this week to fit all this New Japan Pro stuff in so I could get caught up.
Yeah, it's, because the one thing about downloading Impact is I can just skip through the stuff I'm not interested in. which is a lot of stuff.
I was going to say.
I think last week I watched it and I got down to 40 minutes of actually watchable wrestling stuff and promos I actually cared about.
That's not bad. That's more than I get out of a lot of the episodes of Raw that I tune in for.
Interesting, yeah. Anyway, moving on. We had tag team match next, which was Kenny Omega and Tama Tonga. So suddenly from Kentucky. Versus Tomohiro Ishii and Toru Yano in a really dynamically interesting match. And Ishii carrying the weight for the Chaos team. Yano trying to avoid everything. The exchanges at the end were just hilariously good. They were really, really cool. I really enjoyed them. Thoroughly entertaining match, and it kind of started to highlight the matches for New Japan Cup, which started today. So obviously we're not reviewing that today because that'd be, you know, as we pointed out, it would kill us. So yeah, this was a good match.
Yeah, this was fun. And Kenny, when he comes out now, is sort of the belle of the ball. Like, he's the one that the crowd pops for really, 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 really big. And I am interested because every time I see him, I think I'm like, when's the face turn coming?
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Because it has to.
Eventually it will do. You would think.
I think it has to. I mean, what is he going to do to convince us to hate him the way you're supposed to hate a heel?
Yeah.
It's like pretty much everything he does, I'm like, I still love that guy.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with it. It's interesting to see how they develop it. Or do they just turn Bullet Club face?
I'm trying to think if there's any problem. I mean, like, you could pretty much just do that, right? I think most of the guys in Bullet Club that are significant enough that we see them on a regular basis are people you could
get behind.
Probably sell to fans as a face, especially if Adam Cole is leaving.
Yeah, I mean Takahashi's probably the only one you couldn't deal with because he's a traitor to Japan, which is a bit harsh, but you could always ship him off to Suzuki-gun.
Yeah.
You know, it's doable, I would think, yeah. Farley, maybe, he's tricky. But, you know, even then, he does do some heroic stuff. Farley isn't, you know, just...
He could be like lumpy, the silent Superman.
Yeah.
You know? It's like doable. The big bruiser of a guy who's got, like, you know, big warm heart on the inside. Because, like... I kind of get the vibe. This could be wrong, but I get the vibe that that's a little bit of who that guy is anyway. Like, yeah, I feel like part of why he's lasted so long is the people who work with him really like him as a person.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes me think he could work as a face if he was part of a stable of, like, a bunch of faces.
Yeah, you get the impression he's just a big, lovable guy who likes eating ramen and drinking beer. And that's...
Yeah.
So nothing wrong with that. Okay, then. Moving on to the next match, which is a tag team match. Tanahashi and Kushida versus Los Ignorables de Japón. In a complete switch around, Tanahashi and Kushida jumped them both before the match started and just showed a level of viciousness.
It was so great!
it was just them being the heels, essentially. They weren't really. LIJ got back on top eventually, and it came back down to Tanahashi and Kushida coming on a come-from-behind victory. But it was really well done and really, really enjoyable.
This is more the kind of stuff that I feel like I was like, yeah, Kushida deserves this. Give these cool things to him, you know, give him the prestige of working with somebody like Tanahashi and like give him cool stuff that's laid in the card so that he gets that little boost because he deserves it. Damn it. And yeah, Tanahashi jumping somebody. I was like, my goodness, you can do that.
Oh yeah. Tanahashi's a bastard when he wants to be.
I know, but I'm used to, because again, I haven't been watching it for very long. Like, I'm used to Tanahashi as being like, you know, you see him and you feel kind of warm and safe and happy and everything is good. And then, like, you know, him jumping somebody, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, it's go time. Let's do this.
Probably the best example of that was Nakamura in 2013 Invasion Attack. And Nakamura was, they were in Tokyo. And Nakamura was God in Tokyo. And you could literally see Tanahashi's eyes as he was walking down the aisle and listening to the reactions. And he just went, right then. Okay, we're going to do this now. And then
I can't imagine Tanahashi and Nakamura in the company at the same time. I mean, I've watched a couple of those matches like from that time period. But because I wasn't a regular watcher, I have no sense of the dynamic there. That's so interesting. I have to go back and watch that.
I strongly recommend it. Nakamura as well got it as well. He was faced for the evening. So it's like, you know, this was a period where Chaos were laying the ground rules for being faces rather than heels, because Okada was massively over and Ishii had gotten over. Ishii was feuding with Naito over the Never Open Weight Championship, and Naito was getting face reactions over. Sorry, Ishii was getting face reactions over Naito. Naito was the face, was supposed to be the face, and was getting booed out of the building every night. And Ishii was coming over as a face. Nakamura was. It's always been incredibly popular and started shifting towards being more of a face. And Yano was madly over as well and was showing signs of being the lovable loser. So that's when they got rid of Takahashi and Iizuki and moved them off to Suzuki-Gun and Bullet Club, and they became a face unit. So
interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that time period is really interesting. It kind of laid the foundation of where you got to now, because all the stories you're seeing now, that was when Naito gave up on being the happy-go-lucky babyface, the earnest cat, because Ishii made him the LIJ Naito, you know, because Ishii's a big bruiser, and though he doesn't do anything heelish, he's like the vicious guy, and Naito, as the sweet scientific Stardust genius, should have been able to be the popular guy in that feud, and he wasn't. He was everyone. Didn't hate him, but he was vanilla. So vanilla. Like, made John Cena seem interesting. You know? Yeah. It was like, he was so earnest, and I'm going to do this for you and for you and for the people. And it's like, you kind of like, it was so close to the, are they doing this intentionally so people turn on him? It was that close. But I don't think they were. I think they just misread the situation. And so, yeah. So that early 2013 period is pretty much the reason why we are where we are now in 2017. It takes 4 years for things to play out in New Japan.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So in 2021, we'll be like talking about the same stuff. Okay. Six-man tag match. Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi, Sanada, Tetsuya Naito defeated Chaos, Kazuchika Okada, Rocky Romero, and Yoshihashi in a very, very, very good match. We got the Naito Okada showdown a little bit into the match. It was cool. Yes, I like this. I like Chaos. I like LIJ. I'm obviously a bit more of a Chaos guy than I'm an LIJ guy, but it was very much fun to watch and very dramatic for what it was supposed to be. And of course, you could say LIJ's tag teaming, whoever is in a tag match with LIJ, everything is so crisp and so beautifully well done.
Yeah, they don't have an off night, do they?
No, not at all. Everything just fits.
Yeah, it was a really good match. It was fun. The crowd was super into it. They somehow hadn't burned themselves out on the very cool card that came before, which I mean, they could have just gotten lucky with that, but I think that speaks to how well New Japan Pro structures a show. Yeah. You know, and of course I got really, really excited for Naito and Okada to square off a little bit. That's always a lot of fun for me. Like that's candy for me to watch all this stuff. I'm like, yeah, I'll sit through an entire show if those guys get to stare at each other across a ring for 30 seconds. Like, that's totally worth it.
The previous 2 hours did not matter. But there you go.
It's not that they didn't matter. It's just that I don't know. There's nothing I care about in New Japan Pro as much as I care about Naito. So those whoever it is that they can put him in a ring with, it brings out those big, like, you know, reactions. That's my favorite part.
Okay, then. Right, well, that kind of brings us to the end of our reviews for Honor Rising and for the 45th anniversary shows. Like we said, New Japan Cup started today. So it's wrestling for the next 10 days in single elimination format. 16 men started the tournament today. We've got 8 men left after the end of the day. I'm not saying who they are because I haven't watched it yet, and I don't want to spoil it for Chelsea, and I don't want to spoil it for me either. So we'll not look that up today because you guys can go find the brackets. You can find them on Wikipedia. It's all cool.
Kenny Omega wants us to stay up late and drink a lot of coffee and make some popcorn so we can watch it live. And
and you do always do what Kenny says?
I want to. I don't know. I'll find time to watch it at some point, but I wish I could watch it live if it weren't at, like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning.
It's not so bad for us here because it's like usually about 6 a.m. but I can't fit a whole show in before I have to go to work. So
yeah.
Yeah. And I'd rather watch the whole show in one go.
Yep.
Anyway, we will be back in 2 weeks' time looking at New Japan Pro Wrestling. Next week, we'll be back with a beginner's guide to Japan with a show looking at New Japan in 1990 and a tag team tournament that was very, very interesting and a trip to behind the Iron Curtain. Yeah, you read it right. Communist Russia, Communist Soviet Union and pro wrestling together at last. That's next week's Troop in Japan, and in 2 weeks' time, we'll be looking at New Japan Cup. Thank you very much for listening to us today. Thank you very much to my broadcast colleague, Ms. Chelsea Spolin of shouldersup.net. That's at shoulders_up, and you can find Chelsea at Chelsea Comics.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure and never a chore. You can follow me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can also follow WrestleTalk at WrestleTalk_TV, where you can comment, talk to us, chat to us, say how much you like the show. That'd be really nice. We really appreciate that. And also, you know, find all sorts of cool other stuff. You can listen to the other podcast as well. You can listen to The Squash with Gavin Duenas and Paul Taylor. And you can listen to The Finn Martin Report with Finn Martin and Ollie Davis. And if you listen on WrestlePlus, you can also find myself and Finn Martin talking wrestling history, looking at 1994 in the latest episode 23. And there should be another episode out that went out yesterday, I believe, which will be episode 24. So thank you very much for your time today. Really appreciate it. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye!